welcome into the Ramwood Sports Podcast. Here's your host, Benjamin London. What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Ramwood Sports Podcast. So if you are not familiar, I'm Benjamin London. I'm the host of the Ramwood Sports Podcast. And usually I do the show called the Ramwood Sports Show on a radio station. But unfortunately, you know, due to the virus, I'm doing a podcast now. So welcome into the Ramwood Sports Podcast. I'm glad that y'all have joined on this lovely day today. So you're like, how in the world are you going to talk about sports when, you know, there is no sports going on? Well, there's still actually a lot of stuff going on. So NFL free agency is still going on. You know, there's college football playoff over and unders that came out from Las Vegas the other day. So that's what we'll be talking about today specifically. So we're going to try to keep it short and sweet, see how it goes. Because, you know, I'm not used to doing it in podcast form, which, by the way, thank you all to who voted on the polls on my Instagram story and on my Twitter account. That basically was like, hey, should I start this? And majority of all the votes were yes. So thank you so much for the love and support. I really do appreciate it. So let's get started off with NFL free agency. And just today alone, just for the sake of time and, you know, of my actual, like, knowingness and, you know, knowledge of certain things in the NFL. If you know me very well enough, I'm not a big NFL person. I watch it every now and then, but not like super big on it. So today we'll be talking about the NFC South. And you're like, why the NFC South? Well, it had the biggest, you know, interest. It had the biggest NFL free agency moves, in my opinion. And they also had a bunch of jersey changes. And so we'll talk about that and who I think is going to win. So let's just start by team and just go down this list. So Tampa Bay, we'll start off with them. Obviously, the biggest headline for Tampa Bay was Tom Brady signing with them. This was really huge because I don't think a lot of people saw this coming. I think a lot of people thought, and you know, he'll probably just go to, you know, a team in L.A., you know, that's where he's from. He's from California. You know, that's where he wants to be. But obviously, no, he wants to go to a team, make it his own team, you know, because up in New England, it's more of a, okay, it's Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. I think now down in Tampa Bay that he has this opportunity to just be, this is Tom Brady's team, not Tom and Bill or Tom and Gronk or Tom and Julian or whatever. It's just Tom Brady's team. And I think this is the biggest start for him since he's even been with the Patriots. So I think this is going to be really huge for him to go down there. I think the other side of this is you got to think of the guy that was there before Tom Brady, and that's Jameis Winston. You know, you're obviously seeing a huge upgrade. And you're like, well, you know, Jameis Winston, he's an NFL veteran quarterback. Well, he threw over 30 interceptions last year. Not very productive. But I think Tom Brady is going to be a huge upgrade. You're going to see a lot of a turnaround since Tom Brady is coming into this offense. I think it's going to be a lot better. I think year one may be a struggle, but I think year two you'll start to see a little bit of a turnaround because I think Tom Brady will get more comfortable as the year goes on down there in Tampa Bay. And one of the reasons why I think Tom Brady, they didn't really release this, but I feel like one of the reasons Tom Brady actually kind of stuck around in New England was, you know, he was just getting what he wanted. But, you know, when he was in NFL free agency, he was like, hey, can I have 2 years? And I think the deal was $50 million. If I was correct, I may have to go back and look later on. But New England wasn't willing to offer $50 million guaranteed, but Tampa Bay was willing to guarantee that money. And I think that's what really sold Tom Brady and say, hey, if this is guaranteed money, I'm going to take it. Like, I'm not going to sit back and, you know, just waste my life here in New England and not get what I actually want. And I think you kind of saw the frustration there between New England and Tom Brady since after winning that Super Bowl against the Falcons. And so I think that's has been the biggest part for him is I think he was ready to go, and I think he was ready to start a new journey somewhere else. But, you know, New England just kept pitching and pitching and pitching and, you know, got what they wanted, and now they lost what they had. So I think this is going to be a huge upgrade for Tampa Bay. I think this is going to be a very competitive team this year. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they do with Tom Brady. Obviously, huge upgrade. So I think this is going to be a big year for Tampa Bay, especially they got new jerseys, which actually look better than the other team that we'll talk about later on in this segment. So the next team on this list is the Panthers. Obviously, if you haven't seen, Teddy Bridgewater was with the Saints, and now he's signed as a free agent with the Carolina Panthers, and I think this is huge controversy here because I have a bunch of Carolina Panthers fans that I know of personally because, you know, I live in between Atlanta and Charlotte, so a lot of people that I know, you know, are either happy or upset because they also released quarterback Cam Newton as well. And a lot of people are like, oh, but Cam, you know, he was our man. He was the guy. He was the, like, MVP. You know, he basically started Carolina Panthers football to come back to what it should be. And, you know, I could see why they go out and get Teddy Bridgewater. Matt Rhule, I think he did an absolutely incredible job at Baylor. You know, starting off Baylor's program there, turning it back around to where it should be. And I think that's what he's going to try to do with Carolina in the NFL, and he's going to try to turn them around and see how that works. And I by taking the first step, he goes out and gets Teddy Bridgewater, which, you know, was honestly the best backup quarterback in the whole entire league last year. I know a lot of people could, you know, change my mind or, you know, have a different opinion, but that's what this show's for. That's what this podcast is for. So, you know, my opinion, I just think he was the best backup quarterback last year. And, you know, he has a ton of experience. You know, he was with the Vikings for a long time and then just kind of floated around from team to team to team until he finally found, hopefully, a home there in Carolina. And so I think he'll be a very good quarterback for them. And I think he'll make a huge difference in this new Carolina Panthers offense. So I think that's going to be huge. Hopefully Cam Newton, I think he'll land in a team that really just needs a good veteran quarterback. I know he's coming off a huge injury. It's kind of a risk to see and be like, hey, is it going to work out? I think they just basically just were like, hey, Teddy Bridgewater, we know it will work out, versus Cam, like, eh, we don't know if it will work out. So that played probably another huge factor. In my opinion, is this an upgrade or a downgrade? I think it's an upgrade. I think Teddy Bridgewater may not have, you know, the running abilities that Cam maybe had earlier in his career with the Carolina Panthers, but I think he may play a huge factor in the passing game, and I think that's what Matt Rhule wants to kind of really do, put a guy around Christian McCaffrey that, you know, Christian McCaffrey doesn't have to carry the ball every time to try to win a game for Carolina, and so I think this is going to be a huge get for them as well. So that is the Carolina Panthers. That's an upgrade for them. So let's go to the next team on this list, and it is the Saints. The Saints re-signed Drew Brees. I think this was an obvious move that they were going to make. Drew Brees, I think he's 39. I don't think he's 40 yet. And, you know, I don't think he hasn't really worn off yet, and I think this is a good move for them. Even though they're signing him to a one-year deal, I think it's a smart move. You know, you're not paying him as much. He basically, I think, wants to retire a Saint, if I'm correct. So, you know, it's just, I think it's a good move. And especially you have the backup quarterback, Taysom Hill, which, I mean, he can run, he can pass, he can catch a ball. I mean, he can do whatever. He can return kicks and punts. I mean, obviously, just an athletic kid as a backup quarterback. So I think that right there, even if Drew Brees doesn't work out this year, and it kind of just fades out and, you know, his career is kind of coming to an end, you have a really young kid that, I mean, can literally do anything and everything you ask him to do. And I think that's going to be like a huge factor, especially if Teddy Bridgewater Not Teddy Bridgewater. Drew Brees doesn't work out. I'm thinking Teddy Bridgewater because, you know, he was the backup quarterback for the Saints last year. So, you know, I think Taysom Hill will be a great quarterback. They just got to let him have his chance. And I think he'll get his chance this year. I really do. I think Drew Brees, I think his career is kind of coming to an end, kind of like Tom Brady. But I think you'll definitely see him be very productive this year in this offense by not just running or passing, but definitely, you know, just all around. I think Taysom Hill will probably be a starting quarterback by the end of the year, hopefully, for the Saints. So we'll see how that goes. I know a lot of Saints fans will probably have different opinions about that, but I think they're still a playoff team. Is it an upgrade or a downgrade that you signed Drew Brees? I labeled it as neither because, you know, you're not really upgrading. You didn't really get anybody to get an upgrade, or, you know, you didn't really lose anybody. Like, you know, you did lose Teddy Bridgewater, but it's not really a downgrade either. So I think it's very big for them that they get Taysom Hill back and try to at least have a young quarterback around Drew Brees to give him a little bit of a competitive edge. So that will be interesting for the Saints to see how they go into this year and how Drew Brees will do by the end of the year. And last but not least, with the worst uniform change in the whole entire NFL, is the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, they keep Matt Ryan, which, I mean, is not a surprise. I mean, you know, you just saw it coming anyway. But they did get rid of people like Devontae Freeman, Desmond Trufant, Beasley, and Austin Hooper. They lost Austin Hooper due to free agency. But what they got back in return is actually a very good veteran quality team, really. And honestly, they got Todd Gurley, which obviously, you know, if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, that's all you wanted to hear right there is you got Todd Gurley, because Georgia native, Georgia Bulldog. I mean, it's like a fairy tale. It's like a dream story that, like, you read to your kids at night. It's like, you know what? This is what I wanted to do. Like, this is what I dreamed of, and this is what happened. Like, my dream came true. I played for the home team in the home state. And then even when I went pro, I played for my home team in my home state. Like, that's a dream right there. And so, obviously, a lot of Georgia native or Atlanta Falcons fans are all excited for that. But they also got, I'm going to have to say his name right, Laquan Treadwell. Yeah, I got that right. Hayden Hurst and Dante Fowler, which obviously, you know, you lose a bunch of people, but you gain a bunch of people right back. And really and realistically, it's all veteran talent. It's not, you know, like not young guys that you have no idea who their name is. You know, Laquan Treadwell, he was obviously a wide receiver with the Minnesota Vikings. He's played there for 2-3 years. So he has experience under his belt. You know, Hayden Hurst, he played for the Baltimore Ravens. You know, got passes from Lamar Jackson. So, you know, he's already ready to go. And then Dante Fowler, one of the best, you know, edge rushers for the Los Angeles Rams last year. So you're looking at guys that you're just getting in, and they're all veteran talent. They're not young or guys that just don't know what they're doing, or, you know, that just came out of the draft 2 years ago. It's guys that have actually got game experience, and that's really positive for the Atlanta Falcons, and I think that's what they need, because, you know, Devontae Freeman, you know, he's kind of wearing off. He wasn't being as productive as he has been earlier in his career. Desmond Trufant, you know, just not. Basically, all the guys that they let go, except Austin Hooper, I think they could have kept him if they wanted to, but I think the money was the issue. But, I mean, Vic Beasley, Desmond Trufant, Devontae Freeman, the production just wasn't there anymore that they wanted to see. And so I think, you know, it's time to turn the corner and go out and try to get an upgrade. And obviously the Falcons have done an incredible job doing that. So I definitely gave them an upgrade. I know it's not a quarterback change, but it's definitely a whole entire offense change. I think I saw, I think it was a graphic. I think it maybe the NFL posted it or maybe the Atlanta Falcons posted it, but basically their whole entire starting offense was first round picks in the NFL draft, not like in the same year, but every player that was picked was picked in the first round. So very big upgrade for the Atlanta Falcons for that offense. And I think, you know, you got Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Laquon Treadwell, you know, Todd Gurley in the backfield, Matt Ryan, you know, you really just kind of need another solid running back. I know, you know, they're probably not going to go out and get one, but, you know, another wide receiver or another running back, I think it'd solidify that whole entire offense. And all their offensive linemen were all first-round picks. So it's going to be very interesting to see, but it's definitely a huge upgrade for the Atlanta Falcons during this NFL free agency. So the other thing I mentioned was the jersey changes. So Tampa Bay, if you didn't see theirs, I mean, I think, honestly, they looked really good. And they said, basically, I saw where a bunch of tweets were. I'm big on Twitter. Like, you know, a lot of sports people are big on Twitter. And I saw where, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, these are really good upgrades. Like, you know, Tampa Bay really kind of set the bar for, you know, these jersey changes for the NFL. And then you already kind of knew, like, the Atlanta Falcons were going to come out with a jersey change because they announced it early in the off season. And the other day I'm sitting on my phone and I see these pictures and they're like, is it leaked? Are these leaked? And I'm like, yeah, well, they look pretty. And then the next day later they come out and release these. And so I have a picture, the all white. If you haven't seen these, just go look it up. Like, go Google Falcons new uniforms. That's what I have Googled right now. And so I'm just going to go from left to right. So the left one is all white, like the all white jersey. I will say automatically right off the bat, I do like how it says ATL, like right there in the front. Like, you know, if you're big in Atlanta, you know, the Hawks, obviously big ATL, you know, the Braves, the big A on their hats and helmets and stuff like that, you know, representing the A, it looks really cool. Like, you know, you got different stuff. So I do like the big ATL, but, you know, I like the all white. But then if you look right next to the all white uniform, you have a gradient red to black jersey. And honestly, deeply, I hate it because I feel like it's kind of like a, hey, let's try to be more modern. Hey, let's try to, you know, try to make it look cool. And it just doesn't. I just don't like it. I don't. But then again, I'm not a big fan of red and black anyway. So that may be another reason why. But, you know, I just don't like how it's gradient. It, you know, I don't see a Falcon kind of like, you know, when you think of a Falcon, you don't think of gradient red to black. You just don't. So, you know, just, and I don't know. But the rest of them, I guess they're all right. The all black, I think, you know, you can do some stuff with that. And then obviously, I think the best one that I think everybody liked the most was the throwbacks. And I do love the throwbacks. I think they've modified them very well. The number on it looks really, really sharp. I mean, just the whole throwback uniform looks absolutely beautiful. I would say the biggest change I would make is I'm very small into detail about this kind of stuff, but I realized on the helmet, and a lot of people didn't realize this, but I did, that the helmet is matte black, but the stickers on the helmet are glossy. And if you don't know what that means, it's basically like matte black. It's not reflective. You don't really see the reflection. And the glossy sticker is really shiny. So the only shiny part on the helmet is the sticker. And if you're going to make the helmet matte black, you might as well just make the stickers matte as well. That way it just kind of, you know, just goes in with whatever you're doing instead of kind of just, you know, making a change. So if I'm going to rate these uniforms like by grade, so I think Tampa Bay, definitely an upgrade. I mean, from what they had earlier, I just, you know, I'm not like big into colors, but you know, Tampa Bay, they struggled. They didn't know what the world they were really doing with their uniforms. And now they know what they're doing. Like, they hired somebody to come in and basically replace their uniform for them. And so I'm definitely giving them like an at least A or B plus, like A minus. Okay, A minus. We'll meet in the middle. But like, from what they had to what they have now is a major upgrade, like huge. Like, you know, I bet you, like, if I was a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, I would be ecstatic. I'd be off the wall right now. Like, these uniforms are absolutely beautiful. Like, if you haven't seen them, go check them out. But it's absolutely incredible what they've done. So definitely an A minus. For the Falcons, I wouldn't say like, oh, it's you know, like horrible, but it's not the best either. So you got to give it like a C. Like, not C minus, not C plus, but definitely like a C, because it's not great, but not horrible. But it's definitely a downgrade. I think definitely it's definitely a downgrade, guaranteed. But I think a lot of people wanted to really see a more of a just a actual red uniform more than it being a gradient, because now with this red to black, you can only wear black pants with this uniform. And, you know, that kind of, and somebody pointed this out to me, my good friend DJ Hilson. He was like, you know, that's the alternate uniform. Now the new home uniforms are all black. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, I do like the black, you know, all black. I think, you know, a lot of, every time you see a Falcon or, well, not every time, but, you know, I guess when you think of an Atlanta Falcon, you think of black and white. And so I guess that kind of mixes in well. So I think they did good with the all black and the all white and the throwback. But just the red to black just really just throws me off. Not a big fan of it. So, yeah, that's, I'm just going to have to give it a C. A C. Yeah, definitely. So that is actually all of the NFL. So let's go ahead and talk about the college football over and under. So recently, college football in Las Vegas, they have like a betting thing or whatever down there. Basically, and it has like over unders. And so the over and unders were released for the 2020 football season. And I'm going to go over just the ACC today, because I know not enough time to go over like every conference. So over the next couple episodes of this podcast, we'll go over, you know, different conferences and stuff like that. But it will definitely be interesting to talk about and have different opinions. And also, we'll try to get in some special guests as well on these episodes. That way, they can give their opinion as well. But today, it's just me, so we're going to try to go over these as best as possible. So here we go. Let's start off in the ACC. Obviously, you know, ACC, a lot of people have really kind of just doubted the whole fact of the ACC, because it's literally like Clemson versus everybody else in the ACC. And a lot of people say, you know, it's not very competitive, you know, not a lot of action, you know, that's what the SEC is for, you know, and you have a lot of action in every team. But I think as we start to turn this corner into a new decade, you're starting to see more coaches in the ACC turn the corner as well in recruiting and becoming a bigger program as well, you know, like North Carolina, Georgia Tech, Louisville, you know, they're trying to rebuild programs in the ACC to make it more competitive. And, you know, that's what the ACC likes to see. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see as well. So we're going to start off with just, you know, what this list had. If you want to go check it out, I'll post the link to all these later on my Twitter, at Benji London MSC, and I'll post the pictures and stuff like that for the ACC and the over and unders, but not mine. So I'll give you what. So basically, the over under is like what Las Vegas thinks this team, how many wins they'll have by the end of the year, pretty much. So we're starting off with Boston College, because that was the first team that was on the list. So literally, we're just going down what the list says. So Boston College, they're predicted to win 5 games this year. Is it over or under? For me, I said even, so I would say yes. I think they'll get 5 games. You know, they play people like, you know, I think they'll beat Syracuse in game 1. I think they'll beat Kansas, NC State, that's 3, Ohio 4, and Holy Cross 5. I just, you know, tough time seeing them beat UNC. I think they're kind of turning the corner with Coach Brown up there in Chapel Hill. You know, Virginia Tech, you just never know what you're going to get. They're definitely not beating Clemson. Oh, well, they could go over. Purdue could be a win unless they make another weird year up there in Purdue. But they're not beating Louisville. I don't see them beating Florida State. You know, they just don't have A.J. Dillon. They, you know, their biggest running back, they just don't have him anymore. So I think it's about even at 5. You can't guarantee that win at Syracuse, but you can definitely guarantee that win at NC State. So, yeah, about even at 5. I think 5 is the best number there for that team, and I think that's probably a very accurate number for them to give in Las Vegas. So we'll stick with the 5 and make it even there. All right, so the next team on this list is Clemson. Their over-under is 11.5. I don't know how you win a half game, but, you know, let's just say it's 11.5. And before I even looked at the schedule, I just put over because, you know, you got Trevor Lawrence coming back, Travis Etienne, you know, a bunch of veteran receivers. You know, Dabo just recruits super well. I just don't see him having a problem. You look at their schedule, Akron, game 1. Easy win. You know, you got Boston College the next week, NC State. I think, honestly, their toughest test in the first half of this season is Notre Dame. You know, you never know what kind of Notre Dame you're going to get. It varies from year to year. You know, just Coach Kelly, just, you know, he brings in good talent some years and some years he doesn't. So, you know, I think this is just going to be – I think that – really on their schedule, I think that may be their hardest game. I think Louisville could be a hard game as well. But other than that, I mean, you're not going to get a competition against Wake Forest. You know, Virginia, you're not getting that. You know, Florida State, Georgia Tech. Like, you're just not getting competition. I think they're going to easily go over 11 game wins. I think it was just kind of a safe number to put it at 12 just because you're like, hey, you know, safe number. So basically they're just saying they're winning out the regular season. So, yeah, I definitely said over because, you know, 11.5, I'll go 12. So I think they'll be over just a little bit. So the next team on this list is Duke, which this is actually going to be a little bit of a different conversation now because they got Clemson's backup quarterback, Chase Bryce, I think that's his last name. I could be totally wrong, but forgive me if I did mess that up. But anyway, their number was actually 5.5, which was very surprising to me because you look at teams on this list, there's guaranteed 3 wins already for them on this list. Middle Tennessee, Charlotte, and Elon. Is there, I think, easily guaranteed 3 wins. But you do have to put in consideration, you know, like I said, the Coastal is getting a little harder. A lot of teams are trying to turn the corner. You know, they're going to play a team like Wake Forest, a really good North Carolina. They're going to play a decent Georgia Tech team, a Virginia Tech team, Virginia team that just came off a Coastal championship, a Notre Dame. NC State just is kind of iffy. So, is it over or under? I'm actually going to put it at under. I don't see them. I think 4 games is probably the best realistic number that you can put for Duke. You know, even though they did get him, the backup quarterback from Clemson, I don't see how they can win more than 5 games. So I'm going to have to leave it at 4, and that's my number for them. So next team on this list is the Florida State Seminoles. Obviously, you know, new coaching change. It was the guy that came in from Memphis. I totally forgot his name. I should have looked it up before. But definitely going to be a new program this year with Willie Target out as the head coach, and now it's the guy from Memphis. So it's going to be an interesting year, and they have a really good schedule as well, non-conference-wise. They got West Virginia, Boise State, Florida, and Samford. I know Samford's like, you know, the only cupcake game, but, I mean, people know about West Virginia, Boise State, and Florida, so it's very interesting to see. So the number that they gave for them in Las Vegas was 7.5. Let's just go down. I guess we'll have to go down this list and kind of see if they can win 7.5 games. So West Virginia, I think that's one. Boise State, I think they bounce back from that one. That's two. No, they're not beating Clemson. They're not beating Louisville. Miami, they could beat Miami. They'll probably beat Syracuse, beat Samford, NC State. So yeah, that's about an accurate number, 7.5. I could see why they could pick 7.5. I'll say that one's even. I don't want to go. I think 7 would be a max. I don't see them winning 8 games. I think I pointed out losing to Clemson, losing to Louisville, losing to Florida. But, you know, I mean, it would be a huge turnaround for them to go out and get 7 wins this year versus their schedule last year where they just, you know, kind of fell flat early. And so I think that would be a huge comeback year for them and the Noles. So about 7.5, that's about an even number. So I'll stay even with that one. All right, so next group on this list is Georgia Tech. And if you know me, I'm a Georgia Tech fan, so I'm not trying to be biased, and I will be 100% honest with this list as we go. This is actually the 4th hardest schedule in college football this year, so this is going to be a very interesting one. They open up the year with Clemson. I hate to say this. They're not beating Clemson. UCF, I think it will be challenging, but I think they'll get past UCF. It's in Bobby Dodd. You got Virginia Tech the next week. That's tough. You could honestly flip a coin because you just don't know what kind of year Virginia Tech will have. You don't even know what quarterback they'll have yet because they used like 3 or 4 of them last year. So that's kind of a, you know, iffy game. I don't think Pitt's going to be as good this year as they have been in years past. So I'll give that one to Tech. Duke, like I said, you know, 50-50 with them. Miami, probably 50-50 with them. Gardner-Webb, it's a win. North Carolina, I think that's a loss. Virginia, that's 50-50. I think they beat Syracuse. Notre Dame at the end of the year and Mercedes-Benz. And then Georgia the week, 2 weeks after that. I think 3 is a low number. I'm going to go over, but I'm not saying they're going to be bowl eligible. Probably, I think a safe number would be 5 at the max. I think Tech would probably get 5 wins this year at the max. Probably the best scenarios to win games, Central Florida, Pittsburgh, Duke, Miami, Virginia may be a good win. Gardner-Webb, obviously, I think that would be a win. And Syracuse. I think that's about a safe number as you can get. I don't see them beating Georgia. I don't see them beating Notre Dame. And I definitely don't see them beating Clemson. That's 3 games right in North Carolina. That's 4 games right there. So, I mean, the best they could do is 8-4, which I think that would be a huge turnaround right there automatically from year 1 to year 2 for Coach Collins and that staff. I think that would probably be the goal that I would set is if they beat Clemson in game 1, I think you could really see them trying to win this Coastal between North Carolina. And I think it will be very competitive. But, you know, like I said, I think Clemson's just a little too good, even though, you know, Tim Bobby Dodd game one on a Thursday night. I just don't see it happening. So I think they'll be over, but not by much. I think the safe number for Georgia Tech this year is going to be 5 wins. All right, so the next team on this list is the Louisville Cardinals, which, by the way, came off in what, in my opinion, was a really good turnaround year for them. You know, obviously rebuilding after coaching change and the coach from Appalachian State. So their number for them is 7.5. You look at their schedule, North Carolina State, Murray State, Syracuse, Florida State, Virginia, Notre Dame, Clemson, Western Kentucky, Boston College, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, and Kentucky. I think 7.5 is a safe number. I think that's about even. I would go even on that one. You know, I think their losses probably come Clemson, Notre Dame, and honestly, they could go over, but I think they could go, if I would go over, I would go 8, because I think they could beat Kentucky. But yeah, that's, I would be safe. This would be one of the teams that I would be safe of going over on. If I was going over or under, I would go over and feel confident with this team going over. You know, just a really good year for them last year, trying to bounce back, and I think this is going to be a big year for them over there and try to at least compete with Clemson. And luckily, they don't have Clemson until game 7 of the year, so it will be a huge turnaround for the Cardinals this year. All right, so next on this list is the Miami Hurricanes. They're at 9. 9 wins is projected this year for the Miami Hurricanes. They face Temple, UAB, Pitt, UNC, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Wagner, Michigan State, Wake Forest, Virginia, Virginia Tech, and Duke. So I would have to go under. So they're saying that they would have four. Let me look at this again. The number's 9. Excuse me. So they're saying they're going to have 3 losses this year. 3 losses, in my opinion. Let's see. I would go North Carolina, Florida State, and, well, you know what? That may be a safe number. But I feel like 9 is just a little too much. I'll have to go under, but only by a little bit. I think that may be an 8-4 team. You know, they just kind of struggled last year. Manny Diaz is still trying to figure out this team. And De'Aaron King, I mean, he could be a great quarterback. He could be a bust. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see how that plays out. But I think they're going to definitely be over a 500 team, make a bowl game. But 9 is a really strong number for them this year, even though with their weak schedule, Temple, UAB, Wagner is their non-conference games, and Michigan State. But, I mean, that's a really weak non-conference. You know, UAB's a really decent team. Michigan State, you know, obviously out of the Big Ten. So I would go under just to be safe. Don't see them definitely winning 9 games at all. All right, so NC State, their projected number for this year is 4.5. I'm not even going to go over this list, but they do have Troy, Mississippi State, Delaware, and Liberty as their non-conference games. And I think it's going to be a rough year for them. And I think, honestly, Troy, Delaware, and Liberty could be their only wins this year, because they face teams like Louisville, Florida State, Clemson, Wake Forest, Syracuse, North Carolina. And a lot of those, Mississippi State, and a lot of those big games are on the road. So I just don't see them pulling off more than 4 wins. So I'm going to have to be even with that number right there. All right, so the next team on this list is North Carolina, which came off a huge year after Mack Brown took over the program. So they actually got a really good schedule this year. I know a lot of people will probably say different, but you're looking at more of a competitive natured coastal division, in my opinion. You know, you got a lot of coaching changes within the coastal, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how North Carolina bounces back. Sam Howell, you know, year one under his belt, I think he'll be a really good quarterback this year. And shout out to my friend Cameron Rucker. He'll be playing up there in the fall. So I think it's going to be a very interesting year. They start the year off with Central Florida, at Central Florida, then James Madison the next week. Which, don't sleep on James Madison. They're one of those teams in the FBS that are really good teams. They're in the playoff every year down there in the FBS playoffs. I mean, every single year they're down there in the playoffs. So it's not a team to sleep on. But UConn is kind of their weak focal point. But they do get Auburn at Auburn as well. So that's a big get for them on their schedule. So the number for them is 8.5, which I'm going to have to stay even with that line. Auburn, obviously, I think is probably going to be their hardest win to get on the schedule. But, you know, I think they could, if you wanted to really feel very confident about this UNC team, I could see them getting 9 wins. But it would be very, very challenging, like I said, because you really don't know what kind of teams you're going to get. Usually you just, it's a 50-50 and you just flip a coin and that's what team's going to win that day in the coastal. So it's going to be very interesting. I think I could be safe going over, but I'm going to stay even with the 8.5 spread there. I'm not going to go over or under. I'll stay even with that one. All right, so the next team on this list is the Pittsburgh Panthers, or most people just call them Pitt for short because, you know, don't want to say Pittsburgh all the way out. So, anyways, so on their schedule, I think this is probably one of the weakest non-conference schedules in the coastal. You get Miami, Ohio, Richmond, and Marshall as their non-conference games, and Notre Dame is actually on this list as a non-conference game as well. So, you know, you got one hard team as a non-conference, but the rest is, you know, pretty easy slate. Pitt is actually projected to win 6.5 games this year. I'm going to have to go under because you get teams like Miami that's supposed to be good, Georgia Tech, you know, fourth game of the year. You don't know how they're going to really look yet. Virginia Tech, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida State, Syracuse, Duke. I just don't see them getting that 6.5. So I'm definitely going to have to go under. I would say the safe number for them is 5. But like these, like I've said, these lines are very, very close. It's not something I would go like, you know, more than 2 games. Like I said, Georgia Tech was 5. And the number was 3. So I haven't gone over or under 2 games yet, but I do see Pitt at least winning 5 games this year based off their schedule. So the next team on this list is Syracuse. Their non-conference schedule, Colgate, Western Michigan, and Liberty are their non-conference games this year. Their projected number to win is 5.5, which I'm going to have to stick to that line. Got teams like Louisville, Florida State, Georgia Tech, which I just and Liberty is also a non-conference game, and Rutgers as well. I did not realize that, but you know, I don't see them beating Boston College. 5.5 is probably a good number. I see them beating Colgate, Rutgers, Western Michigan, Liberty, and NC State. So yeah, that's 5. So yeah, 5.5 is a good number, so I'll stay even with that one. So the next team on this list is the Virginia Cavaliers, obviously the Coastal champions last year. Their non-conference schedule is actually not bad, starting off the first game of the year against Georgia, in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Then you got UConn, which, you know, then Old Dominion and VMI. I have no idea what VMI is, but, you know, that's new to me. But anyway, the hardest non-conference game really, I think, in maybe the ACC is Georgia and or UNC's Auburn. You know, that would be a tough tie between those two, but definitely two hard games for them. Virginia not going to beat Georgia. Their number for them this year is 6.5. I don't see them winning the Coastal. You know, I see them losing to UNC, Louisville, maybe a Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Clemson. So, yeah, and Miami. Yeah, I think that number's about right. 6.5, maybe a 5-win team for the Virginia Cavaliers this year. So, yeah, that number's about right. 6.5, so I'll stay even. Probably won't take a risk there and go over or under. I'll just stay even with the 6.5 there with that one. All right, so the Virginia Tech Hokies are next on this list. They got Liberty, Penn State, Middle Tennessee, and I think that may be all their non-conference. Oh, and North Alabama as their non-conference games. So Liberty, obviously, I think they're not bad, but I don't think they're going to beat Virginia Tech. I think Virginia Tech beats Middle Tennessee. Their number for Virginia Tech this year is 8. Like I said, with Virginia Tech, you just kind of never know what you're going to get out of them. Game 3, Georgia Tech. Like I said, it's a 50-50 game. I think they beat Boston College, beat Pitt, beat Duke. Penn State, we'll count it as a loss. They'll beat North Alabama, lose to North Carolina, lose to Louisville, beat Miami, beat Virginia. So, 8, yeah, that's about right. That's about even. Virginia Tech wins 8 games this year, losing to UNC, Louisville, and Penn State. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that's a good number for them. 8 is a good over and under for them, so I'll stay even with that. And so the last team in the ACC for the over and under is Wake Forest. Obviously coming off a huge year last year with Jamie Newman, which is now with the University of Georgia. And so now they're kind of looking for a new quarterback, and their number is 7. Their non-conference games are Old Dominion at Appalachian State, Villanova, and Notre Dame. So this is a really tough schedule for them. Old Dominion, you know, just not a team to sleep on. They've beaten Virginia Tech and Virginia a couple times in the past. Villanova, which is a big basketball team but not a big football team, so that may be a challenge there. Wake playing Duke, you know, you could maybe give them that win. I think that may be a safe one. Florida State, I don't see them winning. Syracuse, a win. Clemson, a loss. App State, you can't even say that's a win. I can't. Notre Dame, I can't say that's a win. Miami, I can't say that's... I'm going to have to go under. And this is probably the one where you're under by more than 2. I jinxed it. And I just think it's just... You look at this schedule and you go, I think they beat Old Dominion. I think they beat Villanova. Duke's a toss-up. Florida State, if they're going to be as good as they say they are, you know, that's a tough win. Syracuse, I think that's a win. Clemson, you're not winning that one. App State, you can't even guarantee that's a win. Notre Dame, that's not a win. Miami, that's not a win. North Carolina State, that's a win. Louisville, that's a loss. Boston College is a toss-up. You can't guarantee that 7 wins. So I'm going to have to go under, but I mean, I think they're guaranteed 5, maybe 6 game win season for them this year. And so I think that is going to be a very interesting year. So what are my predictions to win the ACC Atlantic and the ACC Coastal? I think before the season even starts, unless Trevor Lawrence has a horrible injury and Clemson just, like, all of a sudden has, like, no talent whatsoever, you're going to definitely probably see Clemson win the Atlantic. And just to be fun and realistic, I'm going to say North Carolina's going to win the Coastal. They got a lot of talent coming in. They got a lot of talent surrounding Sam Howell. And I just think, you know, Coach Brown has done an incredible job up there at Chapel Hill, and I think he will continue to do that up there in Chapel Hill this season. All right, so that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you for tuning in to the first ever episode of the Ramblin' Sports Podcast. If you have any thoughts, questions, or comments, make sure to leave them on Twitter. We will be starting the Twitter page here soon. But if you have any thoughts or comments or questions, leave them there and we will get to them during the show. And also, hopefully, we'll have some special guests later on in the season as well. So thank you for listening to the first ever episode of the Ramblin' Sports Podcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at The Ramblin' Sport for more content and information as the season continues. Thanks and have a great week.